Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Simon Hildebrand. He is currently a University of Manitoba Bison and Winnipeg Sea Bear player. Last season with the Bisons was his first year, and he racked up a list of awards from U Sport Rookie of the Year, U Sport All Rookie Team, U Sport Second Team All Canadian, Canada West Rookie of the Year, Canada West First Team All Star, and Canada West All Rookie Team. He was then drafted first overall in the U Sport CEBL draft to the Winnipeg Sea Bears, where he went on to win CEBL U Sports Player of the Year. Simon, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely, man. I'm happy to have you. I was telling you offline that I just interviewed Coach Mike Taylor, and that was cool. Obviously, talking a lot about the Sea Bears season and how all that went. Now you're in the midst of a season as we record this, not the Sea Bear season. You're obviously playing with the Bisons. And before we, you know, hit record, as I read off all those awards, I kind of said, hey man, like, you know, I said, how's the season going? You're like, oh, you know, it's going pretty good, man. Happy to be stepping into my new role, you know, as a bit more of the leader on the team. And I was like, man, did you not see your awards list? This thing is like super long. And so, but we kind of got into that. How's the season been going so far with this new role, and after playing a pro season, how have you been adjusting?
Yeah, it's been good. Like we're 8-2 halfway through the year so far, heading into our semester break. I think last year we were 9-1 heading into the break, and we got a really good team again this year. So I'm excited to see like how far this team can go. I think we're a little bit of a different team this year. Like we lost some key guys last year, but we have new guys stepping into bigger roles who provide different things. And I think we can be just as good, if not better, this year. Mm-hmm. It's like coming into this Bison season after playing in the CBL and having all these experiences, it's been like an awesome challenge for me coming in. Like, I don't know, almost like expecting, not expecting it to be easy, but having like the mindset where, mm-hmm. you know, I've had all these unbelievable experiences and I've gotten so much better over the summer. But like other people are probably also getting better and probably going to focus on me a little bit more.
Yeah, man, it's interesting because like not we all, but the goal is when you step it away into like, you know, your off season, so to speak, you know, you try to get better. But in this case, you stepped into an off season and then went into a pro season. And now you're coming back again to, you know, let's be honest. I mean, it is a lower level, right? It's college. And that's the pros. And so, you know, it must have given you a sense of confidence. Like you obviously, again, looking at all your awards, you didn't lack confidence or skill, but your mentality must have been different kind of stepping on to the court this year than it was in your first year.
100%. Like, I mean, this summer I was trying to have like an open mind, like the whole time, and just learn as much as I could. Mm. And I knew like kind of being there, like, hey, I'm lucky to be here. I'm going to try to be a sponge and soak in everything I can and get better that way. If I wasn't playing on this team, I'd probably just be in the gym trying to lift a lot, trying to get lots of shots up. So it's like a different method of getting better over the summer, like an off season. And then coming into this season, like, yeah, like you said, my mentality definitely switched. Like coming in where last year I was more just trying to like, be like not make mistakes and kind of grow into my role, where this year I'm kind of coming knowing I gotta be more of a leader this year. I gotta be able to like take a few more shots here this year and like help a lot of the younger guys this year, opposed mm-hmm. to last year. I was a rookie last year. I didn't really have any college experience, so
that totally makes sense. It's definitely you probably grew up a little bit quicker than you would have, hey, if you didn't definitely. Have this last experience.
Yeah
that's cool. It's you know, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but you know, I want to kind of start from the beginning, man. I mean, you know, you're still a young man, but it's interesting. You know, you've had a lot of basketball experience up to this point, and you're in I would say a very unique situation, wherein that this, you know, the CBL's around, and I think basketball fans and players are grateful for that league. It's a wonderful league. But you're getting to play pro while you're still in college. And so, again, it's like you're getting this like sped up version or a sped up integration into like kind of what it's going to be like when you're done college. But when we go backwards and we look at where it all started for you, I mean, tell me what your first memories of basketball were, like, you know, when you first started playing it, or your first game, or that mm-hmm. first person that introduced it to you. Tell me about that.
So I first started playing basketball in grade five. I played junior Bison, so just club basketball in Winnipeg. My dad, he coach basketball all the way through high school. Like he teaches at River East. He coaches at River East. And like, I mean, it's not really a memory for me, but I know there's stories and there's pictures. So my dad coached high school basketball, and he won the provincial championship in 2003 with like varsity boys. And I have a March birthday, which is around when provincials are. So he won the championship like the day like after before I was born. But there's a picture of me as a baby wrapped in the provincial championship banner. So I mean, not necessarily a memory for me, but I know like my dad's always loved basketball and like pushed me to be a basketball player. So like I had a hoop in the backyard, obviously shot around like a ton growing up. But the first time I actually started playing basketball would have been grade five for Junior Bisons. And I had my coach's name was Hervé Vincent. He's from
Hervé,
France.
shout out to
Yeah,
Hervé.
French guy. And
Yes, sir.
I know he was with the Bisons for a little bit, like way before I got here.
Yeah, he
But
was.
yeah, he was just a fantastic coach for me in like grade five to like grade 10 for how many years I played. Yeah, that's when I started.
Okay, so you started in grade five. And your dad's team, again, I'm thinking, is that was that Chris Dick's team? Did they win a
Yeah,
title? It was, right? Yeah, okay.
exactly.
Yeah, okay, nice. So yeah, okay, so your first memories are playing Junior Bisons, and you played with Coach Hervé up until the 10th grade, this with the Junior
So
Bisons.
I played Junior Bisons all the way up until I would have left for left to go to prep school. So maybe my grade 11 year. But after, I can't remember what age it was, but I played my last 2 years, I think, with the year up team, with like Marlon Krauss was my coach. So that, I don't know what grade I would have been in, maybe grade like nine, eight or nine. Nine, I moved up. And yeah, that was just another great experience, like just being able to play with these older guys. And they were probably one of the best teams and like best club teams in like Canada, Western Canada for sure. That age, we were pretty loaded, and so just being able to practice against all these guys every time we had practice. And Marlon was a great coach, and both him and Hervé were huge on just skill development. So as I'll go back to when I was in the grade 5 to 8 playing with Hervé. So most coaches, when you're at that age, like if you're tall, you're a post, right? So, and back then, like nobody knows how tall you're gonna be. So all these kids end up being like 6'1", and they're like fives. They have no skills, and they're just like down the block. So he was big on like everybody needs to learn how to dribble, everybody needs to learn how to shoot, how to pass. He's very like European. And so I benefited so much from having him as my coach for the first 3 4 years of my like actual basketball development. So as just like a young, tall, clumsy kid, I was learning how to shoot threes, and I was doing the same dribbling as our little point guards were, and taking all the same jump shots as them. And as I got older, it's just helped my game so much. And then being with Marlon after that, he was like similar philosophy. Like everybody needs to learn how to do everything. So just having that coaching growing up was huge for my development.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that, yeah, that it's, you know, it's interesting you said that. It's like seeing your game now, obviously it's you know, it's a big part of your game is just playing all over the court, right? Like you can kind of play everywhere. And and getting those skills very early on obviously played a huge role in that. But also, I mean, you've been playing, I guess, as a Bison now for a lot of years then.
Yeah,
I was gonna
definitely.
say, like Junior Bisons. Did you guys practice at U of M as well, or was it like you guys practice elsewhere?
No, we practiced kind of like all over. I'm trying to remember. I think we practiced at Frank Kennedy like once a week maybe.
Yeah, so you were
So
there a
we
little
were in
bit.
IGAC, but I remember as a kid we did the this like Bison Jamboree. So we always come like I think it's after the U of M season. All the junior Bison ages come, and some of the players come help out and do a bunch of stations for like 2 hours. And I know often when we were practicing, like younger, like grade 5 to 7, like we'd have some of the players would always come and just help out at a practice here and there. I know Hervé would always try to bring like some guys out just to, bigger guys give tips to bigger guys, like some of their university guards give tips to our like grade 7 guards, and it's yeah, just a great experience.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. So you mentioned a few people already on the obviously mentioned your father. You mentioned Hervé. Who else you mentioned? You mentioned
Marlon Cross.
Marlin. Well, let's talk about mentors, right? Obviously, you have some key people here that have kind of helped guide you in this journey up to this point. Who were some of your earlier mentors and even some of the ones that you have now? Just maybe talk about some of those mentors that you received that kind of helped push you forward in skill development or staying with the game or mentally. Who were some of them besides the ones you've mentioned? And honestly, even the ones you've mentioned, just tell us a little bit more about how they helped you.
Yes, my dad's obviously a big one. Like he's been like with me like my whole life and always somebody to talk to about games and what to do differently here. And obviously he's a coach. He's not just like a nobody trying to like give me random things of what he sees. Like he knows the game, so he's always been there for me. Probably the biggest one is like Matt Dick. I don't
Shout
know
out
if you
to
know, I don't know if
Matt.
you know
Of
exactly know
course, of
Matt.
course. Yeah, of course.
So he actually probably was one of the biggest influences that I've had in basketball. So I went to MBCI from grade 6 to grade 11, and my dad working at River East would drop me off on the way to school. So like my classes started at like 8:30, I think, and so he would always have to drop me off at like 7:30 in the morning. And so I'd be at school for like an hour in the morning doing nothing. And so at about like grade 7 or 8, I would always just be in the gym in the mornings for an hour, just like fooling around. Our custodian would always leave the balls out for me. Yeah, and honestly, shout out her, Mrs. Bissell. She would always
There you go.
come in the mornings and open the basketballs for me, and let
Nice.
me just get shots up in the morning. But in grade 7 and 8, I would just be wearing my regular clothes. I'd just be fooling around,
Yeah.
and like in grade well, around that time, Matt would come in the mornings too and be like, "Hey, like, bring a change of clothes. Let's actually get a workout in, opposed to you just like shooting around, not getting any better." So like every day from like grade 8 to I don't know, like grade 10, like 7:30 to like 8:15, I was getting a workout in the morning. And he just kind of really switched my mindset to, hey, like I'm actually not bad at basketball, especially like, and it's fun like working at this every morning, give me something like to strive for. And then like you start seeing the results in games and in practices. And I still work with Matt today. And now I know he's built his brand like with Atlas Basketball and all that. And I know like he's just helped me humongously with skill development and just like being around basketball and like developing a passion for it growing up. So he's the one
Shout
guy,
out. Yeah. Shout out to
he's the
Matt
one
for sure.
guy, yeah, left out from those coaches I had growing up. And even like today, like Coach Kirby,
Of
like he's a
course.
huge, like I meet with him like at least a couple times a week, just like go over film, go over plays, go over different things here. And even like all of our assistants, like I know Donnie, like Donnie Hayes, you know Donnie?
Yeah, of course. See, I see
Yeah.
me and Donnie running into each other at the gym all
Yeah, he's another guy who just
the
like anytime you want to like watch film or talk this or talk about this kind of plays or how teams are guarding you here, he's always willing to just put in the extra work. Or if he has a gym open in Maples, like he'll always let me in and go get shots of and put me through a workout. Like there's so
time.
many people who are in my life and wanting the best out of me and are sacrificing other things like to help me be better. So
Well, I mean, and it's cool because like when you put the work in, like the people who want to see you succeed will like step up and work with you, right? Like, 'cause you're willing to do the work. And I want to kind of key in a little bit on your experience with Matt, as you brought it up there, those times working with him. I'm guessing it was a lot of times just the two of you, at least at the start, just kind
yeah,
of
and
getting that
every
work in
once in a
the gym.
while, a couple of guys, but often just one-on-one.
Yeah. And I think those are special times because you learn a lot about yourself kind of during that time. And I could tell just the way you're describing it, that those are very like meaningful moments for you in your development. Was there a time when you worked with Matt where you realized you're like, oh man, like you had mentioned, like, oh, I think I'm pretty good. But what was it that made you kind of realize it? Was it like because you were picking up skills very quickly? Was it because the stuff was translating to the game? Or was it just the process that you guys were going through, in those one-on-one sessions?
I would say I don't remember like a specific like light bulb moment that goes on and you're like it clicks, but I just know like doing like different drills, like if you do some like Matt's training now is very not like just cone work. Like you're not just gonna do 10 dribbles on a cone and then go do a layup. It's often like translated to games. Like I think it's the best way to learn, like just practicing game type situations. So I just noticed when like playing like one-on-one with him here, like you work on this move a whole bunch and it starts to become easier and easier. And I would say it's less of like, yeah, like a light bulb moment, but just noticing overall that these skills that I'm working on just start to, they start off being like super hard. And over the course of repetition and good game reps, they become more and more easy. And it just becomes like normal and secondhand. It becomes an instinct, like these moves and finishes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So then when did you know that you were good? Like, when did you know? Okay, let me hold on before you answer. When you were like, man, I'm pretty good. Like, when was that?
So I was grade 8. I tried out for the provincial team. I was a year younger. And I didn't think I was very good, grade 8. I thought I had zero chance at making it. I didn't want to go to the tryout because I was like, oh, there's no way I make this team. I'm a year younger. Like, I'm just going to get cut. I don't even want to go. My dad made me go. And I had like a decent first tryout. Yeah. And I was like feeling pretty good. And it was like they made cuts or they told you if you're coming back to like the next tryout after the second one.
Yeah.
And I had this out-of-town wedding on the second tryout, like the day after. So I couldn't even make it. And so nobody talks to me after the first day. I don't think I told people until like the end of the end of the tryout. So I don't go. And my dad's like, all right, well, like go to the third tryout. I'm like, why? Like they didn't ask me back. And he's like, well, they didn't cut you. Like they didn't tell you not to come back. Like worst case scenario, you show up to the tryout and they're like, oh shoot, like we forgot to cut this kid. Yeah. He's already here. Like we may as well just let him play or something like that. But like I was like, oh, like I don't want to go. Like they didn't ask me back. Like I'm not good, blah, blah, blah. And so I go and I'm like decent. And they pick me to go the next round again. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, and then I know we made, this was John Giesbrecht was the coach at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And so then we made it to, we had like 18 guys left. And so on the premise team, we take 12 roster spots and 3 practice players.
Yeah.
And so I'm like in this final 18 and I'm like, oh, like, I think like if I play this week right and play awesome, I think I can make one of these practice spots. Like I think I can beat out 3 guys here. Where we practice like every day or whatever for the next like 7-8 days, and then he says he's going to make his decision. So like I feel practice. I'm like nervous. I'm like, oh, like I don't know. We'll see how this goes. And I remember like waking up and getting the email saying like I was chosen for like a roster spot.
And nice.
Oh my goodness. Like, and this isn't even when I thought I was good yet. I was still like, man, like, I don't know how this happened. Like some of these practice guys are better than me, whatever. So all summer, you know, the provincial team, it's pretty like rigorous. Like you go basically 6 days a week from like May to early August or something like that.
Yeah.
So we're practicing every day. And I would say I'm probably one of the worst guys of these 15, but I'm practicing every day with 12 to 15 super good guys. Like great coaching. We get all the way, we could go to nationals. I was like the 12th man on the team. Like I didn't play a lot at nationals at all. But then I take those 2 weeks off of basketball after August and I head back into my grade 9 season. And that is when I realized like I'm good at basketball. Because heading into this grade 9 season, like at club, I was just like way more dominant. And then in grade 8 playing basketball, I was fine. Like I was a tall player, I could maybe shoot it a little bit, I could move a little bit. I was fine. People weren't probably too worried about me. But in grade 9 is when I really like kind of came into my own, and I was demanding the ball, scoring at will. Like people like couldn't guard me in grade 9 in the province. And then it just kind of like that clicked in my mind. And then when you work on your own, then my workouts with Matt, you start to really, really see the benefits. Mm. And you like really see your progress. Like saying, hey, I've worked so hard for 2 years now. I made the provincial team. That's already part of it showing. Then you work all summer with all these older guys and you don't think you're getting better. Like you're kind of getting beat up and you're getting cooked in practice. But then you kind of get back to playing guys your own age and you're like, man, I improved so much, but you don't realize it. So you kind of go back to your own level.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when I really noticed that, hey, I'm actually not bad. Maybe I can do something with this basketball.
Yeah. Thing. How'd you guys do that year? Do you remember the grade 9 year?
Won the provincial championship.
Okay.
There we go.
I was going to say, you got to tell us how you did. Yeah. Nice. So that, because grade 9, was that like the, is that still like the junior high Because you were playing grade nine ball, you didn't play up, right?
Yeah. So like,
Okay.
we was like at Tech Valk is the
Yeah,
provincial thing
yeah,
we're playing.
yeah,
And we
yeah.
beat Garden City in the grade
Okay.
nine provincial final.
Okay. Nice,
Yeah.
nice. No, that's a nice little story though. Do you remember any of the players that you played with on that provincial team?
Yeah, like a lot of them are actually like my former my Bison teammates right now.
Like
Like
who are some of the guys?
Mason Kroos, like Sam
Yeah.
Jensen, Jonam Kazadi, like Darren Watts was on that team. I know like Emmanuel Ugba, he's at Carleton. He was on that team. Who else did we have? Off the top of my head, that's all I can remember.
That's what you
Those are
remember,
like
yeah.
that's like
And you said
four
you
or five
coached
guys.
John Gisbert coached that team?
He coaches that year, yeah.
Okay, nice.
And then Nationals, we got like one tough loss, I think, and we ended up being on the B side. But
You take one L and it's kind of that's it.
yeah.
So okay, so you obviously grade nine, you guys won the championship. And then you got two more years. Obviously you kept playing provincial team. What did because I know you actually went and played prep school. And oddly enough, so I want to talk a little bit about that because oddly enough, on your like bios everywhere, it just says MBCI, Mennonite Brethren, right? And so I went and
Yeah.
looked and I was like, wait. And I was like, well, I know he played prep. So tell us, obviously after grade nine, you have, 10, 11. Did you play 12 and then transfer, or did you transfer before going to 12? Like, did you do the add the year on after? I don't remember.
So I did 2 years of prep school.
Okay.
And
Okay.
so I played my grade 11 year in Winnipeg
Yes.
and left for my grade 12 year and then left, did like the post grad year, like the
Yeah.
grade 13, as some people call it, or prep
Yes.
year, whatever.
Yeah.
And
And so,
so,
did you
or
go to the
like,
same school?
no, two different schools.
Okay.
So, my first school was Royal Crown Academic School, which is in Scarborough, like just outside Toronto. And I also played AAU out there for like a team called Uplay Canada, which is in like the EYBL, like the Nike AAU circuit. So, I was supposed to play my grade 11 year in Winnipeg. Like I was still going to MBCI and I was supposed to leave for like 3 weekends or 4 or 5 weekends from like March to June while I was at MBCI finishing my grade 11 year to go play in these circuits. That was also the year COVID happened.
Yes.
So I've lost my chance to play 16U out there in the US playing against all these like top kids in the country. And then COVID happened. And nothing happened. And I was supposed to play continue through the summer. And French team got canceled. And I'm like, man, I don't know if there's going to be a season, excuse me, a season next year, like a high school basketball season. I didn't have any intentions to leave for my grade 12 year.
Oh, you were going to stay.
Yeah. I was like, look, I
Oh.
have my training with Matt every day. I got like a weight room and this like added competition that I need, I'm getting from playing Uplay. But I'm still going to MBCI. That was my plan. I was like, I train at home, train at home, train at home, go showcase my abilities and get this competition in the US and in Toronto. And then COVID happened, obviously. And I was like, man, I don't know if there's going to be a season. So I was like, I guess I got to go. Like, if I really want to be all in on this basketball thing, I got to do it. So I was deciding between that, like Royal Crown or like Edge Prep, which is in Calgary, which are my two options. And so actually I'll back up a little bit before how I ended up getting looked at by Royal Crown.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you that, so tell me.
So I was 16 and they had these like Basketball Canada has these ID camps, like a Western Canada ID camp and an Eastern Canada ID camp. And they're just like open tryout, you pay a fee. Whatever. And my dad's like, hey, let's go. So we have to fly to Calgary. Like nowadays, 2023, they got the camps in Winnipeg,
Yeah.
Saskatoon, Regina, Calgary, Edmonton. Like Basketball Canada is really looking. Like back when I played, when I was 16, it was like Calgary and Toronto. That's it. And so I on our own dime, flew to Calgary for this tryout. And so I was trying out for the 17U team because the 16U team last year, which I didn't try out for, actually, I didn't know about it. They qualified for like the FIBA World Cup for 17U. So I was trying out for that team. I go there, I play really well, like over the 2, 3 days. And the head guy running the tryout was the head coach of the University of Calgary. His name is Daniel Van Horn. And he loved me. And a guy named Michael Meeks, he works for like Basketball Canada. He also really, really loved me. And they're like, "Hey, like, where were you last year? Like, why didn't you come try out last year?" I'm like, "Honestly, I didn't even know about it. Like, whatever, I just kind of came this year." And so they selected for like the two teams, like 10 total guys from Western Canada. So it was like five guys for the 17U team, five guys for the 19U team to go to the Eastern tryout in Toronto. That's invite only. So I went, I was supposed to go with these five guys. They were going to fly me out to Toronto in like April, and I was going to go try out. That was around the same time where I was supposed to be playing this Uplay stuff. COVID happened. I lost my chance to go play Team Canada. And actually the next year, like that was our 16U. I didn't play. They qualified for 17U. COVID happened. Next year, they flipped the age groups. So then I would have to been playing a year up again. And I just, that was a loaded team. They lost like to Team USA in the semis or something. And then I'm too old. So I've never played for Team Canada. I kind of got shafted because of COVID and then the age group switch. So unfortunate. But yeah, so while I was there, this guy Michael Meeks, he's a Team Canada, like Basketball Canada guy. He's like, "Hey, like, where do you go to school?" I'm like, "Just go to high school in Winnipeg, and I just play for my club team in the Winnipeg Junior Bisons." So he referred my name to Dwayne Washington, who's the guy who runs Uplay Canada and who ran at the time this prep school called Royal Crown. And so he hooked me up with him, and I was supposed to play on this Uplay team. And then COVID happens, and I'm like, "Man, I gotta get out of Winnipeg if I'm gonna really pursue basketball." So he's like, "Hey, I actually have a school in Toronto that you can come to." So that's where I decided I chose Royal Crown over Edge Prep because I was like, "I've never met Dwayne before, and he's already has me on his AAU team. And if I go out to Calgary, he's never actually gonna be able to see me. I want to meet this guy and be closer to him and be in Toronto, which is where the base of this AAU team you play is." And kind of be near all that. So that's kind of why I decided to go to Toronto during that COVID year.
Got it, got it. Yeah, no, that I appreciate you sharing the story because, like, I mean, obviously, you hear things, and I've talked to Matt, and I'm like, I don't really know what's going on, and you just hear this, and so now I have a clear picture of like the whole way you got there. So okay, so your last year playing at MBCI was grade 10.
Grade 11.
Grade 11. So
So yeah.
you played your grade 11 year.
That was
Okay,
the
yeah.
year where COVID knocked out provincials.
So it was a cutoff. Okay. And so okay, so then now you go play. Tell us a little bit about how that year and summer went. Because obviously the next question, and I'll kind of give you the preemptive question here is, you ended up coming back to Manitoba. And I know that there was opportunities elsewhere. So tell us how that went, and then maybe just transition into like, why did you decide to come back home at the end of the
Yeah.
day?
So my first year in Toronto, it's still COVID. So we actually didn't play any games like the whole year. But that was probably one of my biggest, I have two big like eye-opening or basketball realizations. And this is like one of them. So I get there, I'm about 6'9", right? In Manitoba, I thought I'm a great rebounder, I'm a great finisher, all this stuff. I get up there, I'm the fifth tallest guy on the team. Right, I'm like they're like playing me at the 3-4. They're like, "Man, you're way too small to play the five. Like, you're a big wing or a four." So I'm like a terrible rebounder. I can't finish. And like the first couple times, then obviously practicing like over the year with these guys, you get better at it. And you,
Course.
I'm I think I'm a good player, so I kind of pick up on it and whatever. But that was like a I so in, it's funny. I only got boxed out once until I was grade 12. Because
Really?
you don't really know what that is
Yeah,
when you're
sure.
athletic and you're 6'9" and I'm playing in K-Pac against Garden City and Maples where they're all 6'1", right? So it's like why would I box out when I can just jump and
Just go
get the
get it.
rebound, right? So I get there and I have to like learn, like obviously like people say, "Oh, box out." I'm like, yeah, and then I'll go jump and get it and not box out. But here it's like box out. I try to out jump and like two guys just out jump me because they're both 6'11 with way longer arms and jump just as high as me, right? And so that was like, oh, So boxing out means you actually have to hit them, not let them get the ball, and then go. Like, it is a whole learning process for me. And so that was a really young team. I was one of our older guys on the team, and so I think that helped me with like a lot of leadership stuff there and just playing there. And it was a great experience. I had like we had three coaches throughout the year, but it was like I learned a lot and just got better just by playing against these bigger, taller, athletic guys. And honestly, like it's kind of like similar in my experience playing with the CBL, right? I'm just playing against bigger, more athletic, taller guys, and you naturally get better by doing that. But yeah, so in Toronto, that was my experience. And then that summer or earlier, maybe starting in like April, May is when the AAU season started. And we were actually going to have an AAU season. So I played with Shaden Sharp, who now plays on the Blazers. He was like number 7 overall pick. He was like our star guy. And a bunch of the other guys on my team are now Division One. But so we had like a training camp in Indianapolis for a week, played a couple games, and then we had another training camp in Florida for 2 weeks, played a few more games, and I went to this like Nike, it's called the Peach Jam, this huge like Nike AU tournament, like playoffs. And I was in Augusta, Georgia, or it might have been like South Carolina on the border there somewhere. And we were there for like, I think 3.5 weeks playing against like the best high school kids in the world, pretty much. And that's where I kind of had probably some of the best experiences of my life. So I got to play against like Bronny James, right? I had to guard Jalen Duren and Derek Lively, who are two guys who are now like starters and pretty good NBA players. And I'm like, man, I'm guarding them. Like when I played against Jalen Duren and he was guarding me. And I remember obviously like 90% of the focus is on Shaden Sharp because he's like a projected lottery pick, whatever. And so I think I hit two threes to start the game for us. And Jalen Duren's guarding me. So I had two threes on Jalen Duren. And then they're kind of like, oh, we got to guard like the white kid in the corner, but he can shoot it. So just having like those kind of moments where, and this other like eye-opening moment kind of playing against these guys is on Instagram, like social media is like so big right now for basketball. And so on social media, you see so and so have this many points, have this crazy ankle breaker, step back three, huge dunk. But when you actually play against these guys, it's like, oh, like he hit one crazy step back three, but he missed four of them. He had one sick dunk and he missed three of them. Or he, like, he's human. He's not what you see on Instagram. So Instagram, you think, man, like I'm like nothing compared to this guy. And it makes you think that. When you actually get to play against it, I started for this team and I'm like, I can fit in. Like I'm a Division One caliber basketball player. Like I'm playing on the same team with all these guys, and by no means am I worse or like struggling to keep up. Like I'm playing well and I'm earning my role, earning my shots. And that was like, hey, like another moment where I'm really good at basketball, and this is just like backing me up right now.
Like you belong there.
Exactly. That's I felt like I belonged. Like another like top moment of my basketball career. So we played against Carmelo Anthony's AAU team, and him and LeBron pull up to the game to watch courtside. So like I was like I've never got to see LeBron play live, but like he's watched me play live, which is
That's pretty cool,
kind of
man.
funny, kind of
That's
funny to
pretty
think about
cool.
it.
That's pretty cool.
But
That's pretty cool.
yeah,
That's
so my
cool. So that was just this. We're just talking summer. This is just your
this is
AAU
just the
season.
summer, my AAU season. And so at the time, this guy Dwayne, who's like our head coach for this Uplay team, he's like he didn't like how things were running the way like the other people were helping him run the school. So he's pulling everybody out and he's like, look, you can go back to the school if you want. I won't be there, or I'm not going to be involved with the running it, or I will find you a school in the US. And so I again, like COVID was still a thing. Like when I was playing in this Nike AAU stuff, we were getting COVID tested every day. You had to wear masks on the bench. Like it was still COVID was still a very big thing. And so I was like, I don't know again what this post grad season is going to look like. Because I had like a bunch of Division One interest, but I had no solid offers yet. And so I was like, I'm scared to go back to Canada to play because my last prep year in Canada, I didn't play any games. I didn't get looked at by anybody. I was like, can you send me to the US? So they gave me like two schools. And so I decided to go to the Woodstock Academy, which is in Woodstock, Connecticut. So it was about like the most northeast possible you can be in Connecticut. Like I'm basically in Massachusetts. So I'm about like an hour from Boston and like 3 hours from New York. So in New England there. And again, that's probably where I learned like a ton of toughness, just because like playing New England style basketball, it's like a really like it's all about just being tough. Like a lot of people, they say out there, like on the West Coast, you got your super soft like Cali guys, whatever. We're on like New England's just like you gotta play in the cold. You gotta bus 3 hours with no heat to go play this team in their tiny cold gym, and bus all the way back to your like it's just I don't know, it just breeds a different level of basketball, which I like wasn't used to. Like I hadn't seen that before in my basketball career. And so when I first got there, we had the first 3 weeks of practice, maybe even more, like 4 or 5 weeks of practice, where just we'd show up, have 2 hours, we'd do skill work for 45 minutes, scrimmage for 1 hour 15, and coaches were allowed to come in every day, Monday to Friday, for like 5 weeks. And so I was playing like awesome. I was like this, I was like dunking everything, I was hitting shots, I was handling the ball. And so I had interest from like dozens of schools. And then I had two Division I offers, one from the University of California, Riverside, and one from like University of Jacksonville. And so they were both like my California Riverside one, I didn't take right away. I was like, hey, I'm playing great basketball right now. I want to wait a little bit, like see if I can get some more, have some options. And then they had a commitment from like another big guy, like a week later, and they're like I guess we kind of have the offer still. Like we do, I don't have paper, but like they verbally offer me. They're like, hey, like I'm just saying, you know, we have another big guy. We're not really super interested. So I was like, I don't want to go there. I'm not really wanted. Jacksonville, they kind of offered me, and then they kind of like slowly stopped talking to me. We talked to other guys, and it was like they were kind of like, hey, we just need a big. We've offered like six kids. It's like first one or two to come, we'll just take you. And I was like, I don't know, like again, like you want to go where you were wanted. That's kind of how I felt. Like, I wouldn't want to go there and be like, oh, like, I don't know, we're kind of like iffy on this kid. He more fills a role, he fills a position of need for us instead of, hey, we want this kid for who he is and what he brings to the table. So I didn't like that. Kept playing. And here's what like the college basketball transfer portal ruined college basketball. So my goal was always to go play Division I. And so it got to the point where I was talking to Northeastern University. It's in Boston for like from October all the way to like April when I committed to U of M. And they wouldn't offer me a scholarship. Like I went on a visit there, I had everything, but they wouldn't offer me a scholarship because they, one, wanted to see who they would have at the end of the year, what guys were leaving, what guys were going to come back. And then the next day, we're like, hey, once we know who's leaving and coming back, then we're going to look in the transfer portal and see what guys we can bring in who are third-year players from other schools. And then after that, then we're going to look at like the top, maybe like ESPN guys or bigger name recruits and see if we can get those guys in. And then after that, they're like, oh, now we got to look at the prep school guys, and then we'll look at the high school guys. So it's like, if you're not an ESPN top 100 player, you're probably just not going to go Division One, because nowadays, if you're good, you'll go to these big schools. But they just only recruit from the transfer portal because you don't have to sit out, right? They would way rather let another school develop these players for 2, 3 years, and then like reap the benefits of the other schools developing them. So that was tough. I had like these two offers kind of fall through. Not really the best for me. So I kept playing throughout the year. Nothing would happen. And then it kind of, I was like, I had just gotten home from the school in like March, I think, because I was taking like high school classes still. I still had my diploma from Toronto. So I'm in high school classes. I'm allowed to play. As soon as their season's done, I can come home. I don't really, the classes don't really matter. So I come home and I've been, I talked to Kirby kind of throughout my 2-3 years. And then I kind of just decided, like, hey, like they want me at U of M. And, you know, Kirby's a great coach. He's going to like use me to my abilities. Yeah. I'm going to be put in a great position to succeed. And that's when I decided to commit to U of M and come home.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, I mean, that's a, it's crazy because the COVID year really changed what, like what the pathway used to be. And the COVID just like muddied it like crazy. It's just like, so you were right in the midst of all of that. You know, I know, you know, us here in Winnipeg, obviously the Sea Bears, Kirby, all your teammates, your family are probably all happy the way it worked out. And you probably are as well, but it's just interesting because it's really like you walk us through the whole story and, you know, in another world where COVID doesn't happen, you're probably playing at a Division I school or something because all that transfer, that stuff's not, doesn't even come into play. Right. Mm-hmm. But that said, I think, I don't know, like I have a sneaky suspicion and I'm curious what you think about this, that this was actually the better move at the end of the day.
100%.
You know, yeah, you feel that. Cause like, think about it, man, like you would not be playing professional basketball right now. You would not be getting the touches and the reps necessarily that you are now with the leadership and the presence and the way that your game is getting to develop, the role that you're taking with your team. You know, that likely wouldn't be the case, in your first and into your second year. For sure, you wouldn't be playing pro because you're not even allowed to do that. So like the level of development and opportunity that you're getting now is greater than you likely would have gotten had you, you know, ended up at Northwestern, for example.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Like, just like, it just kind of shows that like everybody has a different path. And like, mm-hmm. sometimes you may think, hey, it's not the right way, but it'll all work out in the end. Like your work will, like, if you trust your work, it'll take you where you want to go. Like,
yeah.
I'm coming back to Canada on my AAU team. I think I was the only guy of our like 12 to not go Division I.
Mm.
And kind of seeing that, I'm like, man, like this doesn't make any sense. I was starting. I think I'm better than some of these guys, like whatever. I don't think I'm the 12th guy. Even if I was the 12th guy, I think I'm still good enough. I'm good enough to be a Division I basketball player.
Yeah.
But I decided to come home to Manitoba. And, yeah. You know, I had a great first year. Some of these guys didn't see the floor their first year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was an All-Canadian. I was starting. I was playing 40 minutes,
yep.
Scoring this many points, getting this many touches, this many game reps. Hey, they're going back to second year. Maybe they're playing a little bit. Hey, I played in the CBL all summer.
Yeah.
Like, I was a professional basketball player. Playing against guys that went to, you know, high division ones who have graduated. I'm practicing with them. I'm learning from them all summer, playing against them, and then playing against these other competition in the games. Like, yeah. So even if I would have known how this would have worked out, I would have, like, without a doubt, come and play U of M.
Yeah, you would
have
picked this, right?
100%. Sure. I think I clearly made the right decision.
Yeah.
And it's, so it's, everybody's path is different, and some kids think, hey, it's like D1 or nothing, or like, I don't know, U Sports is a clear step down. And you know what, like, maybe if you're going to Duke or going to, you know, Manitoba, there's going to be a clear difference, but like at the end of the day, U Sports is still a high level of college basketball. Mm-hmm. You can still go play pro from U Sports like I did after 1 year, and hopefully mm-hmm. I can keep playing play 4 or 5 years in the CBL, then go continue to play pro after that. Like, it's you can make it out of U Sports. You can make it out of any college.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you know this too. I mean, you might be a little young, but you remember some of the guys, like even a guy like Rashawn, like he played Division I and he ended up at Manitoba, right? And so he actually went that route and he played in Manitoba, and he said a lot of the same things that you're saying now. Except you just never actually went and played. He played and had all the issues and all that stuff. But again, it's like, like overall talent, it's lower, but it's the role that you get to step into and play, especially for a player like you who has the ability to go play at that higher level. You're just going to get those reps. And even before the CBL was around, this was well known that, players like yourself that were like elite, like say U Sport players, often did better in their pro careers, because if you took the two players and the person's at the level they're at and they could play Division I, the chance that they're going to punch through and actually like make their roster and play and get a lot of touches is so much more diminished And then they go in U Sport and they're going to get the opportunity after their college career. A lot of those same athletes end up having great pro careers because they've developed their game. They've actually like expanded and grown as a player. Whereas the Division One, and you know this, like Division One basketball, you've seen a little bit with the AAU and the prep stuff. It's like, it's cutthroat. It's like, it's pretty much professional, like already, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you're not good enough. You're like, hey, see you later. We're bringing someone in. Like you experienced it when they were recruiting, right? Like, oh, I don't know. Yeah. Or we need someone to fill a role, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, it is interesting to hear you say that. You're like, I would still pick this. And I agree with you, man. It totally makes sense.
And like, if let's say like Northeastern had offered me, I probably would have gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like had I gotten like a solid offer to go, like that's what I left Winnipeg to do. I left mm-hmm. my grade 12 year and then did a post career because I wanted to go Division One. Like I could have gone to Manitoba, could have committed my grade 11 year, gone there to play right after grade 12. And look, I had so many unbelievable life experiences and like basketball learning experiences the 2 years I was away from home. Mm-hmm. Like that helped me become a better player so much.
For sure.
And I'm not saying that like never go Division One, it'll never work out. There's stories where people go Division One from Canada, have a great career and go on to play. Well, I think people think it's, you can only go Division One and U Sports is not good at all. Or I think, hey, it's, you got to do what's best for you.
Correct.
And your fit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's well said, right? It's exactly it. So, I mean, tell us about that first year, man. So you come back and play. You guys had a pretty special year. You had, I mean, again, get back to the intro that I gave you where I read off more awards than most people get in their entire career in one single season. So tell us about how that year was adjusting, stepping into that role, and just give us an overview of for people who don't know, how you guys did that year.
Yeah, so we finished 18-2. Like the best record in program history at U of M. And so how the U Sports like national championship works is two teams from Canada West, two teams from Ontario, one team from Quebec, one team from the Maritimes, and then the host school gets in. So this past year, it was St. FX, which is in Halifax, which is the Maritimes, and then the one wild card. Mm-hmm. So one team that, you know, let's say they should have made it, but they lose, whatever, like one wild card. So it's, I would say more often than not, it's an Ontario team, because they're probably one of the stronger conferences. You know, this year, actually, I think it's Canada West is a stronger conference, but whatever. So we were 18-2, and we got upset by crosstown rivals Winnipeg, who, upset, but it was like 2-3.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were both very good teams. Like, so they knock us off, and then it was us or Queens for the wild card, and they, like, narrowly beat us. So we were, like, the last team to not make it and didn't end up get to go to nationals. But I kind of came into the year. I didn't really know what to expect. Just kind of like tried to just like fit in, do this. I know Curry was always on me to, hey, like we want you to do more than fit in.
Yeah.
But I kind of just like would take what the defense give me and just kind of play with my teammates, play off my teammates. We just had such good chemistry, played really well together. You know, had an awesome season. And like I had a good season. Like I think I averaged like 17-6 for my numbers. And if you compare that to every other all Canadian, I would say I probably clearly had the worst numbers of every all Canadian. And I think one of the huge reasons that I got all these awards was because of the team success.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were 18-2, we had the best record in our conference, and I think we had such a good balance of players filling the role. Everybody would do everything. Everybody would, like, my first year, I wasn't the best defender or rebounder. We had other guys who would, like, make up for my not as good on defense. Like we had Wyatt, Kieran, like, Isaac Miller-Jones, like, on our team last year. And all those guys would also rebound, which would allow me to focus on other things. So, like, if we have the exact same numbers, but we finish, let's say, 15-5. I don't think I get an all Canadian.
Mm.
I think I'm like maybe an all conference guy still.
Yeah.
But like probably not first team. So I think a lot of reasons why I got this individual success was just built off my teammates.
Mm.
Right. Like without them, doing their roles and us having a great year altogether, we don't go like 18-2 and my 17-5 or 17-6 probably without that record isn't good enough to be all these awards. But because of that is what helped me. So
yeah. Well, you're a good man shouting out your teammates, man. you're a good man. That's what a captain does, man. But no, and you're right. Like again, you said it, like it's when people look at those awards, they do factor that in. It's like, does the team win? Because there's plenty of players who put up, you know, 20 points and the team sucks. They don't get conference awards. They just don't, right? And so having a good team is least of that. And a lot of times those awards are somewhat team awards, right? Like when a player, individual player who fills a specific role, whether it's the you know, in your case, like, hey, I score the ball, you're going to get that award, but it is very much a reflection of the team success, right? And so you're absolutely right. When we speak about this team success, and, you know, it's come up a few times now, the Sea Bears, you know, you got drafted in that U Sport draft first overall. You go to the Sea Bears. I would imagine that it must have been exactly the same kind of thing. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I always wanted to fill my role. We had a great team. Tell us about, you know, maybe how that CBL season changed your perspective of how you saw yourself within the game of basketball, or maybe it didn't. I don't know. Tell us about that first season.
Yeah. So kind of like coming in again, like first year playing pro, I'm like the youngest guy in the league, youngest guy on my team, right? Like I'm just like, hey, again, kind of same as all my new basketball experience. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to learn as much as I can, take advice. Like at the end of the day, these guys I'm playing with are exactly where I want to be. All these guys are had good basketball collegiate careers, and now they're all playing pro. Like, we were a pretty young team, but a lot of the guys had played at least a couple years pro. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to learn from these guys, hey, if they have any little advice from playing pro here, or like this kind of thing in practice, what to work on here, or other big guys, hey, in this scenario, I found doing this. Like, I was just so open to trying to learn. Mm. And I benefited so much from having like coach Mike Taylor with us. He believed in like continuity and like cohesiveness as a team. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the teams in the CBL would go through turnover every week, right? And have some guys will come in and play 30 minutes and then they'll bring in a guy from somewhere and go from playing 30 to not playing at all. And there's all this back and forth.
Yeah.
Where like we had one guy come in, like Shane, came a little bit late, Osiande, but like he was always supposed to be on the team. We knew he was coming in. Mm-hmm. Other than that, like we didn't have any switch up at all throughout our team. And so like Coach Taylor kind of told me, he was like, hey, like you have a role on this team. I don't want to bring in another big guy at your position who shoots it and plays like you, because that's going to take away from your success. Mm. So he was so huge, and like he had a role for me, and he didn't want anybody to take that role away from me. So just being able to practice with these guys every day and just learn from them and have a role carved out on this team that I could like grow through with growing pains. Like mm-hmm. there's games this year where I did not shoot the ball well and I did not play well. And if I was on a different team, or if we had like a different coach, that could have been, all right, quick phone call. We're bringing in another big guy who can shoot. Like this guy's not cutting it. And to be honest, that's probably the case overseas. But I was lucky because, you know, I was young. I can go through these growing pains and the rest of my teammates are going to be there. They're going to like push me to get through these growing pains. And it worked out because like our last game of the year, we lost in a playoff game. And obviously like not the result we wanted, but I got to start that game and I had a great game. Like I think I had a double-double, hit a couple big threes. So just like with Coach Taylor, and just being able to learn from my teammates, and just it was an awesome experience.
Yeah. So tell me what you remember about that first home game, man, because there was so much excitement around, like just the buzz in the city, buzz in the basketball community, and you obviously know this already, how well we showed out and support the team compared to what you see in other markets. There's literally nothing like it. And so what do you remember about that first game?
Yeah, like it was nuts. We had like 7,000 people. We sold it out. It was sold out for a couple of days before heading in. And then my first ever pro basketball shot was a wedgie. Came up, took a three.
Yeah.
Got it stuck in between the rim and the backboard.
Yeah.
So I know, hey, just playing in front of that many people, like like you get jitters. That people always ask me, like, how is it playing in front of these people? Like, you nervous, man? Kind of like the first, probably the first minute, maybe 45 seconds you're on the floor, you kind of feel the jitters. And then as soon as I took that first shot, even though it was like a wedgie, whatever, as soon as I took it, then the kind of all went away.
Yeah.
It's kind of, then you get, oh, like you take a shot, you start running up and down a little bit, get some blood flowing, the nerves kind of leave. And at the end of the day, it's just basketball. But yeah, just like playing in Winnipeg versus playing anywhere else was a huge difference, right? Like
Yeah.
we play in the Canada Life Center, right?
Yeah.
An NHL arena
Yeah.
with probably like at least 5,000 fans in like nearly every game, if not more. Or like we go anywhere else, we're playing in WHL arenas that are half empty
Yeah.
with 2,000 to 3,000 fans.
Yeah.
Like it's just, we got treated like an NBA team by our ownership, our front office, our fans, versus like, I can't speak from the player experience from like other teams, but I would imagine that like they come play at Winnipeg and they kind of see what we have here, and like who wouldn't want to play in Winnipeg in front
Yeah.
of these fans and get treated like we do. Like I felt like I was an NBA player,
Yeah.
like in the way our organization was run and where we played and our fan base. And so yeah,
Yeah.
just like definitely wouldn't want to play anywhere else.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it's cool because like I said, like this, had you not been in Canada, this like that wouldn't have even been a
Exactly.
possibility. You would have been watching, like, oh, this was really cool, but you would have been like, man, it would have been nice to be out on that court.
Yeah.
So I mean, it must mean something to you to literally be playing both collegiate basketball, but then professionally, like again, I'm assuming you have a goal to go on and play after your collegiate career and play maybe full time professionally, but you're doing it already. And so you got to do that in your own city. And I know this is maybe for you, maybe you lack a little bit of like how big that is, but I'm sure Chad has told you like this is like he played all over the world and he never got to play in his own city. And then he got to actually play in his own city for his own team. And so I know for him it was pretty special, but what did it mean to you to represent Winnipeg in a professional league in Canada, the city that you grew up in, and being a leader, man, like again, obviously being in the community and just being like that presence that people like kids are going to look up to you. They were already doing it with U of M, and now they're going to even look up to you even more the fact that you're playing professional.
Yeah, like you said, like I probably can't relate to like what Chad's been through, right? Because he's played around the world. He's played in like Japan. He's played in Mexico, and
Yeah.
he's played in the CBL 5 year, but he's been like
Yeah.
Ottawa, Saskatoon, and he finally got the chance to play in Winnipeg, which is probably
Yeah.
huge for him. But I'm just like, my first ever professional season, I was in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And yeah, just like growing up here, like, and just being able to have my family at every game
Yeah.
and being able to
That's
have my
cool.
friends at every game, and like the people that have helped me develop into the player I am today. Having them be able to see me in my first ever professional season, just seeing like how far I've come,
Yeah.
and just yeah, like I know, I feel like Manitoba has always had an awesome basketball community that gets overlooked by a lot of Canada.
Yeah.
Like I think like our provincial teams are always like, we always finish like fifth, and we will lose to like Ontario by one in a quarterfinal. And then they'll go on to smoke everybody else in the tournament. And we're finishing fifth and sixth in these tournaments. But I think in reality, yeah, Ontario and Quebec are probably two better provinces than us basketball wise. But like, we're just as good as Alberta and BC. And like, people think, oh, like Manitoba, like whatever, probably nothing. But I think finally people get a chance to see that, hey, like Winnipeg and Manitoba is like a basketball province. Yeah, like we
Yes.
still have a lot of hockey, like we got an NHL team, but like basketball is like a huge, and like you see the culture and just like the amount of kids. I know there was like that Basketball Manitoba post not too long ago, but like just the growth in
Yeah.
basketball being played in the province, like it's huge. And I
Yep.
think finally other people around the country are starting to see that, and Manitoba is starting to get some recognition. And like I said earlier, like when I first, like the main thing that kind of got me and propelled me up to where I am was just this Team Canada ID camp, right? I went to Calgary. I had to fly out to Calgary out of my own pocket. Like my dad and I went there, and I got played well, then got identified, and that kind of kickstarted everything. But like, what if I what if I hadn't gone to Calgary? Or if I, let's say I didn't, we didn't have the money to go to Calgary, or we didn't want to spend that money. I didn't think I was good enough. And now we have those ID camps in Winnipeg. And it's just so much easier for kids now to, or maybe not easier, but just more convenient for these kids to get looked at by Basketball Canada. And that's what kickstarted my whole basketball career. So why can't that kickstart another Manitoba kids basketball career to go on and have a similar career that I have?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's well said. And I think something that we didn't really talk about, but when you talk about the community here and the basketball community and how supportive it is and how strong it is and how much talent there is here, you know, all we have to do is look at, you know, the Crosstown Rival game that took place where UWB, like, it was packed and like tons of Manitoba talent on the floor as well, right? It wasn't just like, these are all, these are tons of local guys as well. And you have two teams from the same city. It's not even that big of a city. Like when you look at other, like the other U-Sport teams out west, it's like, you know, you look at Calgary and, you know, and I know there's some other schools that are there as well, but the big ones are Calgary. You have U of A, you know, you got the Lethbridges and stuff like that, but like Winnipeg's not that big as far as like population. We have two schools and then you add Brandon in the mix as well. The province itself, I think, punches above its weight when it comes to the amount of people here and the amount of basketball talent we have and our support. And this is what you see because we can get that many people to go and fill out a Canada Life Center, the NBA Arena, and come support. That says it. Whereas other provinces, they weren't even thinking that. It's not like Edmonton was like, hey, we got to get it in the, what are they called? It's a Rogers Center or something. Yeah. They weren't doing that. We set the precedent with that, right? And that I think is going to, you know, encourage the rest of the league to do those things. But you're right. It's like there's a lot of talent here. There's a lot of passion here. And you're a huge part of that, man. Like you're a result of it, but then you're also now a part of leading it, right? And that's going to kind of be your next, that's part of your next future journey, man, is like leading, being one of the basketball Manitoba leaders. We're going to wrap up right away, man. You're a really good storyteller, by the way. I have a few questions before we get off, before we wrap this up. So, I ask just some like quick ones. So you decide which ones you want to answer, because sometimes like things don't come to mind. So I'll just ask both of them and then you can answer whatever one you want. Okay. So you can tell me your most memorable basketball story or your funniest basketball story.
Okay. I'll say memorable. I mean, I've probably talked about a lot of these stories throughout, but
you can go back to it. Yeah, it's all good. Well, yeah, or if it's another
like,
one.
I'll touch on these like playing in front of LeBron.
Yeah, that's cool.
Moment. But the one I haven't touched on is probably the game winner I hit in the CBL at home. We were playing Montreal, and we were up like five maybe, and so. Like the CBL, we haven't talked about like the Elam ending.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. The target score. So, yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, target score, obviously, like with under 4 minutes left, like you shut off the game clock, you add 9 points to the winning team, and you just play to that target score. Right. So, it's awesome because every game ends on a game winning basket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so awesome. So, I know on that team this summer, my role wasn't going to be get the ball to Simon, let him hit the game winner. Like that wasn't my role on that team at all, right? We had other guys to do that. But we were playing Montreal. We were up like five or six. One of our better guys, EJ, was driving and he fell off balance. He hit me in the corner. I pump fake, one dribble, pull-up jumper, and game winner. And like it was a close-ish game where like it was actually like a pretty big shot. Like if I didn't hit it and they go down and score, then like probably timeouts are being called and who knows what's going to happen. But just like the crowd erupted, like guys mobbed me, and just being able to do that at home. I'm sure Chad has a similar story. Like he hit his in our first ever home game.
Yeah.
Right. Again, close game. Like it's just that feeling from Winnipeg in Winnipeg, filled out crowd, close game, game winner at Canada Life Center. Just, like hometown kid being able to do it. It's just unbelievable experience.
That's big time. Like
that's a tough one.
I love that. I love that. I remember the highlight and like because you had it. That was super cool, man. What do you feel about, speaking of this, just because you brought it up, that Elam ending or the target score? Sorry, Elam ending is technically, I think, caught like a patent or whatever the guy is. Yeah. You're not allowed to use it. So target score. What do you feel about that? Because now you're going back to the U Sport. Yeah. It's like, hey, this is just like, you know, quote unquote normal basketball. Like the clock runs out and like that's the end.
Oh, I love the target score. I think it's awesome, right? Like, you think the, I think the NBA All-Star game is doing it, like the TBT, the basketball tournament out here from it, they're doing it. And it's just like you watch a basketball game, and when there's 2 to 3 minutes left, right? It's just, it's the worst, right? There's seven timeouts being called, then you're intentionally fouling, you're holding the ball, and it's just, it takes the mo like the flow of the game away, and it's just not that fun to watch as a fan. Or even like I imagine the players, like with 3 minutes left, it's just, it's not basketball. It's who can make free throws, and I don't know. So just the target score, okay. Like I think this year, Calgary beat Edmonton. I think there was like they broke the CB. I guess the league hasn't been around very long, but they set the record for the biggest comeback in target score time, right? They were down 16 going in target score time. So they end the game on like a 25-8 run,
Crazy.
right? And it's just like it's such a mental thing when you play because you think we're up, we only need 9 points, right? Let's slow down, get a good jump, but you can still run in transition and score, and like you don't have to stop playing. And if you're on the losing end of it, you got nothing to lose, right? You just start pressing and you just start hitting threes and jacking threes. And if you get hot, then you can feel the comeback starting to buzz. You're hitting threes, the gap is shortening, and then it's just a race to a number. And it's just exactly. And then every game ends on a game winner. There's no like intentional fouls down the end of the game that wreck all momentum and slow it down. I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
But
no,
yeah,
that's
then
interesting. Yeah, I wanted to
come on.
ask you about that because you're a young guy, and
Yeah.
so for you to have that, it's like, yeah, I was hoping you were gonna say that.
Yeah, and coming back to like to regular basketball, we'll call it. It's yeah, it's still basketball, and
Of course.
maybe it's a little different. And like I haven't played a CBL game in a while, so I'm starting to like forget about all the target score stuff. But yeah, like it just I think it makes the end of the game a lot more interesting for the fans and the players.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, this is very, very interesting. It reminds me more of like when you're playing pickup, or even like, you know, if you're playing 3x3, for example, like, you know, you're like, hey, we're playing to this score, right? You're like, so it's that's all that matters. It's like, what's the score? And you know, and you, that's why, you know, I don't know if you've ever like had this moment, but you'd be, if you play pickup basketball or half court basketball and there's no time and you're just playing to a score, teams like you'll be up a bunch. It does not matter. Like it's irrelevant because there's no time. So it's like being up
Exactly.
five, it doesn't matter. You get, okay, just get a couple stops and you have as much
Exactly.
time as you need to do that, right? So yeah, it's I love it, man. I think it's super cool. You know, Coach Taylor was pretty fond of it as well, and saying good things about it. So I'm all right. One last question, man. It's been super cool hearing your story. I like to end these conversations with a piece of advice. And so for you, I mean, you had an interesting you know, I guess pre-career or like journey up into this point where, you know, obviously COVID was a huge factor. You left your high school, you played, you know, you kind of lost a bit of a year as well. So you've had lots of experience. And like you said, you know, those 2 years you were gone, you learned so much. And so I want you, what I want you to imagine here is that you're now giving advice to some young kids, right? They're 13, 14. And they're, you know, they wanna, they see you playing for the Sea Bears, right? They see you playing for Manitoba. They want advice from you, like, hey, you know, Simon, like how do I make it? What do I do? So what three things would you get them to focus on to essentially be able to achieve their basketball dreams, whatever they may be?
Three things. Well, I know one thing off the top of my head is just like do it with purpose, right? Kind of like back to how when I first started, like I was just in the gym wearing regular clothes, just fooling around, shooting up random shots. But like when I changed to from doing that to bringing a change of clothes and working hard, breaking a sweat, doing game movements, game shots for 30 minutes opposed to doing nothing, random shots for 45 minutes was when I first started to see that change. So if you're gonna just shoot around your driveway or like get in the gym by yourself or with somebody, like do it with the purpose of getting better and do it game like opposed to just doing it to do it and just randomly being there flinging up random layups and shooting half courts or step backs. And yeah, that'd be my one thing. Two, just like don't burn any bridges. right? Like I, like there's, if you get cut from a team, like there's no use in you like going to the coach and, hey, like, I should have made it, blah, blah, blah. Go up and say, hey, what can I do to make it next year? Like I have so many basketball connections back from my, I'm still in contact with a lot of my coaches from when I played in Toronto, my coaches when I played in the US, like my AAU coaches, like obviously my CBL coaches, that's more recent, but like other high school coaches, provincial team coaches. And I'm in contact with all these people because you never know down the road, right? Like, what if you become great and they also do something great and they think they make it this far and they see something on Instagram that reminds them, hey, I remember this kid. Oh, look how far he's come. Like, oh, he works hard. Hey, maybe I'll give him a shot. Like, you just never know. And like, it's not that hard to just send a text every couple months, just checking in with somebody, seeing how they're doing, keeping your name relevant. And like nothing good will come from burning a bridge, right? Like just keep build your connections.
Yeah, I love that.
And third one, just like just work hard, right? Like you think, I know it's pretty like basic, but you think if you're like a 5'11 average athletic kid, and you're in Winnipeg, there's 100 kids probably better than you, or just as good as you, bigger than you, more athletic than you in Toronto, another 50 in Vancouver. And you're all fighting for like one or two spots on a national team, or like one or two spots on an AAU team, right? Like you got to be able to separate yourself. And one, that's exactly like, don't burn your bridges, be a good person. And two, you gotta like, it's not going to be easy. Or like, I'm lucky I'm 6'9", right? Like I can't give you advice and tell you to be taller. So it's just like, I find like, if you work hard, like your results, like somebody will see them, like they'll eventually get there, and you know, trust your work, don't burn your bridges.
Yeah, that's good advice, man. That's you're a wise man, a wise young man. I love it, brother. This is super good, man. I you're a good storyteller. I was just like sitting back letting you cook. This is great. Learned a lot about, you know, your journey, and looking forward to seeing just the growth in you. I mean, like I said, you're wise already. You've experienced a lot already. You've had success in your career already. And so now it's just going to be watching you grow as a man and, you know, as a player, a leader, you know, both on the team and in the community and everything. So I really appreciate you taking the time, and good luck with the rest of the season. Yeah, man, really, really appreciate you. This is really fun.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad we were able to work this out.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.